In today's talk, I am going to explore the idea of the practical possibilities that are enunciated in the philosophy of Advaita and its social relevance. You know, as we discussed in the first lecture, in the philosophical literature in India can be distinguished from many of its Western counterparts by saying it has some relevance to life. It has a practical possibility. And what is that practical possibility? Let us see in this lecture today. In the cultural history of India, what I would do, I would show you how Shankara has been received in India by many big personalities. Then we would see what are the possible social ramifications of this philosophy. In the cultural history of India and in its religio-spiritual life, Shankaracharya occupies a preeminent position. The person who brought about a religious synthesis in the country from Kashmir to Kanyakumari was perhaps Shankara, who was responsible to give a feeling of belonging to Indian landscape that we have today. You know, it was perhaps before Shankara, Buddha did. But, you know, Buddhist philosophy was felt in South much after Buddha. During the Buddha's period, the boundary was North India only. But Kautilya says that it was whole India. You know, during the Mauryan period, it was India. And that was realized only during the period of Shankaracharya. That is, the feeling of whole belonging to the whole Indian landscape. Being aware of the necessity of unifying all the people under the banner of Vaidika Dharma, it was he who made the whole country his place of experiment. Please come. And was immensely successful in his endeavors. Jawaharlal Nehru, the first Prime Minister of India, once remarked that Shankara wanted to add to this sense of national unity and common consciousness, try to bring about a greater unity of thought all over the country, and left such an impress of his powerful mind and rich personality of India that it is very evident today. F.W. Thomas has divided the history of Indian mentality into three periods. The Vedic or Aryan period, which witnessed the creation of the Indian man, the period of maturity and organization, and the post-Shankara or Vedanta period. According to him, the greatest success which Shankara's idea achieved was due to their philosophical profundity and the genius of their author, as well as to the very energetic personal propaganda with which he is credited. While Thomas also mentions the political prestige of South India in Shankara's time as a subsidiary cause, he considers that the main factor for their great success may have been the attention attracted afresh to the Upanishads themselves. I discussed how Shankara did away with the Buddhist and their philosophies during his time. The condition under which the Advaita of Shankara triumphed suffices to prove that it did not flourish as a doctrine of pessimism, a consolation of political downfall or individual disappointment, and lack of interest in life. See, all these things are attributed to Shankara's philosophy by now and then by others. This is not how it is. The immense literature to which Shankara's philosophy gave birth and the even more extensive literature which it influenced justifies the age that followed Shankara being called the Vedanta period. Thomas emphasizes two points. The fact that the Vedanta domination arose at the time of South Indian prosperity and prestige shows that it did not flourish as a consolatory or pessimistic faith, but as a triumph of thought. Thereafter, Vedanta was supreme and much adored by all active religions, and its idea is implied in all subsequent literature. He also pointed out that the doctrine of Advaita is essentially a world idea, not linked to particular people or to any theory or a divinely ordered state. Heinrich Zimmer writes that the Advaita is the typical and the best known philosophy of India, and for A.L. Vasam, it is the standard philosophy of intellectual Hinduism to this day. It is Nehru who asserted that this is the philosophy which represents the dominant philosophic outlook of Hinduism today. The thought of Raja Ram Mohan Roy, who ushered the modern epoch in India, was firmly rooted in the Vedanta. For him, Vedanta was the highest philosophical peak reached by Indian thought, and Vedanta, as interpreted by the celebrated Shankaracharya, contained its authentic exposition. He abridged and rendered into Bengali and English Shankara's commentary on the Upanishads and Brahma Sutras. Balagangadhar Tilak, the father of the modern liberation movement, Indian liberation movement, by his commentary on the Gita, made it the scripture of modern India, drawing forth from it an ethic and social political message capable of rejuvenation of the Hindu society. His metaphysics was that of Shankara. Vivekananda, on the basis of Advaita, tried to develop a world view in harmony with logic, experience and science. Ramatirtha attempted to develop Advaita in a way relevant to the contemporary world. The essence of Vivekananda's message is that in all millions of men, from Raja to the laborer and to the priest to the paraya, God lives, and the knowledge which delivers man from all fear and weakness is the mighty Vedantic Soham. Tagore conceived of Advaitism as an absolute unity of harmony and bliss. The infinite one who is infinite love, the self unborn beyond space, and yet this person is the real man, who is Brahman. Mahatma Gandhi claimed himself to be an Advaitin and many times spoke of the unity of life and souls being one in all. Vinoba Bhave was much influenced by the Advaita Vedanta, and it was a passage in Shankara's Upanishad Bhashya which led him to conceive the idea of Bhudan, the giving the land, and Sampatti Dan. In the Upanishads, we find that access to sublime knowledge is considered possible for all, including Brahmanas and Kshatriyas. I come to the relevance of Advaita. Young celibates, householders, and old anchorites, sons of maid servants and unidentifiable fathers, affluent Sudra chiefs and wanderers who had no occupation. One of the Brahma Sutras states that all men are entitled to Vedic study, implying that through it they may know the sublime saving truth if they are ethically qualified for this, and the martial status, occupation, are immaterial for this. Some great ancient Mimamsaka Vedanta teachers like Badari, who are pre-Shankara, assert that all people, including Sudras, in India we have the scheduled caste people, have the right to Vedic rituals. On the other hand, a number of Sutras lay down the necessity, varna and ashrama vyavastha, for undertaking Vedantic study. For those which talk about the vyavastha, varna and ashrama vyavastha, the transcendental truth these sutras consider is a monopoly of the higher castes. In this matter, Shankara was having different viewpoints. He strongly felt that Vedic rituals are necessary for those who sought their fruits, and those who had the desire and competence for them may perform them. As I was telling one of my lectures, the Mimamsa is a lost science in India, because each karma is related to a fruit. Whatever you want, you can get by doing this. So it looks that there are some certain things that has to be done for getting certain things. it is no more there. So Sankara, you know, Sankara is responsible also in a way to in the onslaught of this Mimamsa science. So those who are not interested in obtaining those promised fruits by rituals may do away with rituals. It is sufficient if everyone discharges his duties and leads an ethical life, and one may give up duties too if one gets tired of them. Sankara is of the opinion that ahimsa, satya, sense and mind control are actions, and pure actions, but pure actions like dhyana and dharana, which has to be practiced by all the people of all castes and occupations. He concludes that all have a right to the highest knowledge. The Sanskrit I just go through. Atah sarvesham cha adhikarah vidyayam paramcha shreyah kevalaya vidyaya eva iti siddham. For him, caste and occupation are not the criteria for Brahma Vidya. Shankara himself did not go through the four stages of life as discussed or as enunciated in the Ashrama Vyavastha. In his childhood itself, he took sannyasa. As a sannyasin, in deference to his mother's wishes, he performed her funeral rites. For becoming a sannyasin after brahmacharya, there are authority of late Upanishads. But a sannyasin cremating his mother, there is no shastraic sanction. In this lies Shankara's boldness in flouting blind beliefs. In his biographies, we come across the details of his encounter with a Sudra. While the former was on his way to Ganga for a bath, he asked the man to move away. And in return, the man replied to him that, the Sudra said, when hundreds of Upanishadic texts speak about the unique, pure, non-relational, indivisible one reality of the nature of truth, awareness and happiness, satya bodha sukharupatma akhandam, when that is being spoken, your imagining differences is really surprising. You know, the Sudra tells Sankara, some wear dress and act like them without any real knowledge, but they deceive householders. When you shouted move away, were you addressing the body or the self? All bodies are made of food. They are all material and do not differ from one another. As for the witness self, how is the consider of a Sudra and Brahmana applicable? As there is no difference in the sun's reflection in divine Ganga and a pot of wine, toddy, so there is none among the one self's reflection in various bodies. Neglecting the one perfect, eternal and bodiless person in all the bodies, why this is false apprehension, I am a pure Brahmana, O dog-eater, go away. Why are you addressing like this? You know, this fact remains that there are so many examples where, you know, even Mandana Mishra's maid servant was speaking in Sanskrit to the people who were visiting him. The parrot in the Mahismati, where Mandana Mishra was staying, when Sankara went, the first he was welcomed by the parrot. The parrot knew all the mantras. And you know, in Banavatta, there are so many places where the constraint of this idea of that Sudras should not have, the knowledge is not there. So, yes, Sankara at once set off his delusion and broke forth into five verses, that is called in Manisha Panchakam. It's ending with, he who has this steadfast insight is my guru, whether he be an outcast or a brahmana. Chandalostu saja savad dujostu bhagavan esa manisha mama. That is how he wrote five verses there. In commenting on the bhashya, which excludes Sudras from access to supreme liberating knowledge in the Vedas, Shankara cites the case of Vidura. Vidura was a Sudra, supposed to be a Sudra, isn't it? And the righteous butcher of the Mahabharata, and explains, as in them there was generation of sublime knowledge due to impression of their past actions, purbakruta samskara, they are attaining the fruit of it fruit of knowledge cannot be prohibited or prevented. Knowledge must culminate in its fruit. In his Eka Sloki, also we come across the anecdote that he gave the knowledge of truth to a person who was suffering from leprosy and made him eligible for vision of truth. Shankara firmly believes that even though guru is necessary, it has only an instrumental value. You know, at one point in Advaita you say that all are mithya, isn't it? Isn't it? The Veda, guru, everything. Upasanta, Jagajiva, Shishya, Acharya, Ishwara, Brahma. There is no Shishya. There is no Acharya. There is no Ishwara. All these things are Brahma. Because they belong to the empirical level. So, guru has an instrumental value in Vedanta and it cannot be the final. The nature of the real must be known by oneself very clearly and directly. Vastu Swarupam Sphutabodha Chakshusha Sveneiva Vedyam Natu Panditena. Not by another man. On Pramanas, Shankara believed that it is believed that Shankara's Vedanta is opposed to empirical existence. You know, always they say, it is all Maya, therefore why should we do Advaita? See, that is how, you know, the prima facie views are opposed towards Advaita Vedanta. Shankara emphasizes that even 100 scriptural texts do not become valid if they say fire is cold or does not give light. For no one can cognize anything opposed to what is seen. You know, the anubhava is so important. Nahi sruti satamapi shita agnihi aprakaso veti bruvan pramanyam upeti. Nobody can say that the fire is cold. There is cold fire. Can you say? Nacha drushta virodhakena chit abhyupagamyate. Nobody can negate what he sees. Vedantic sentences and one's experience, therefore, according to Shankara, anubhava is very important. Those are the pramanas for the truth of Vedanta. The great man who is liberated would work for the welfare of the world, and that is what Shankara's whole thesis. Humility and non-hatred constitute the very nature of the Brahmagyani, who would be of an ethical person of high order. Schrodinger, a philosopher westerner, of course, he did a lot of work on Advaita, says the Upanishadic doctrine of identity has an ethical dimension, that of equality. It provides, he thought, the only adequate and satisfying basis for an ethics of altruism and unselfishness. Now, from this, I go to explore an idea of Sarva Mukti that we find in Advaita Vedanta. The concept of Sarva Mukti. You know, how man cannot be selfish to get himself liberation. The idea of Sarva Mukti is there in few philosophical systems in India. Sarva Mukti, that means, even if you have earned liberation for yourself, you cannot be totally liberated unless the whole society around you is liberated. How you are a part of the nature, that is what I go to discuss another 10 minutes before I come back to other points, how Shankara deals with Advaita Vedanta and its social concerns. In Advaita, we come across the ideal of Jiva Sarva Mukti. The ideal of liberation while alive, that is Jivan Mukti, is accepted, that is, in that I have not given. In that paper, Sarva Mukti idea does not come because it is the part of the concept of transcendence. So, first part, because I am not going to deal with the whole handout I have given, because that will not be possible in this one class. So, the ideal of Jivan Mukti while alive is accepted by most of the prominent exponents of post-Shankara Advaita. Amongst them, there are a few who accept the ideal of Sarva Mukti, those who accept Jivan Mukti. Among them, a few thinkers accept the idea of Sarva Mukti, which instills the notion that universal liberation for all. In the sense that unless all are qualified for liberation, an individual cannot attain liberation even though he is qualified for such a state. It does look like a highly socialistic ideal which has greater appeal for the society at large. From an ordinary viewpoint, it looks a little out of way as the theory of karma, which is accepted by by and large would be meaningful only with an idea of individualistic liberation, not of all at once. In Advaita, the controversy of Sarvamukti lies in the distinguishing between these two who admit only one soul and those who admit many. See, in Advaita there are two views. One is Eka Jiva Vada, another is Aneka Jiva Vada. See, like Samkhya school, for example, it talks about many multiplicity of purushas. You know, similar idea we have in Advaita that jivas are many. Because like sunlight falling in many water pots look different in many, look in different ways. So, we have many jivas. Another view is there is only one jiva. Because after all, when it is reflected, they are only reflections. Reflections are mithya. Sun is one. So, like that, there is only one jiva. The one sun is reflected and same sun is everywhere. That is another. So, those who believe that there is only one soul admit that when one soul is liberated, all the other souls are necessarily liberated. Universal salvation and individual salvation are thus identical in this view. In speaking of its release, this view presupposes unity and continuity of the soul, which is not given to one's experience. Of those who believe in Nana Jiva Vada, that the theory that there are many souls, there are a few who believe in Sarvamukti also. Among them, the Pratibimba Vadins, it is a view, peculiar view in Advaita, as far as the discussing or explaining the status of Jiva, soul, who believe that the God is the reflected image, Bimba, and the Jiva alone as Pratibimba, believe in the idea of Sarvamukti. The genesis of this problem lies in the way Advaitin perceives the ideal of Nirguna and Saguna Brahman. The Saguna Brahman is derived from Nirguna because of Maya. Such an ideal of Brahman cannot accommodate the ideal of Sarvamukti, because when a person becomes liberated, he realizes the Nirguna Brahman bypassing the Saguna one. But one problem that needs to be clarified here is that what is that necessitates the emergence of diversity from the Nirguna Brahman? The philosophic search in Advaita is epistemic, and our experience is the only clue which can conceive of something called Saguna Brahman. Because beyond Saguna Brahman, we cannot conceive of anything else. In other words, the Nirguna Brahman is the conclusion of the philosophic search, not the beginning. The philosophical sojourn starts from appearance to reality, not the other way around. The second way of conceiving the distinction is to see the diverse world, which constitute the multiplicity of the jivas. Here we need not postulate a cosmic maya, but regard the Saguna Brahman as Nirguna itself from the standpoint of the jivas. Here, the distinction between two Brahmans is non-existence, like Saguna Brahman and Nirguna Brahman. That is not there. Since the whole idea of Saguna is relative to that of the selves, and the idea of Nirguna has no relation at all. So the idea of Saguna is related to the selves, and Nirguna cannot be related, it is non-relational. It may be compared to a person standing in front of a mirror, and when we think of him as the original or the reflected image, suppose somebody sees another man standing in front of the mirror, he does not see two persons. There is no other person who is not thus reflected. The God and souls form the whole in which each implies the other. In case of liberation for the jiva, according to this view, it does not become one with Nirguna, but with the God, the Saguna Brahman. According to Sarvamukti, the man when he is liberated, he becomes one with Ishvara. He does not become Nirguna Brahman. This is the state known as Sarva Bhavapatti. You become one with everything, the reality. Becoming one with all. He then sees all in himself and himself in all. You know, Gita says like that, he who sees everything in himself and himself in everything. That is the idea. until all souls are liberated in the same manner, he cannot be finally liberated or attain to the state of impersonal liberation. When such consummation takes place, the saguna itself disappears and endures as nirguna. That is those who view sarvamukti idea, they talk like that. No one individual can attain liberation till all are qualified for it. Absolute salvation is possible only with world redemption. When world redeems totally, then only the person also can go along with the world to be liberated. It is an extension of the idea of jivan mukti, that he lives in the world for a while till his fructified deeds are exhausted. Similarly, such a man virtually freed, continues as Ishvara till the final redemption. A question may be raised here that since the souls are infinite, it may be asked whether universal release is possible at all. For Advaita, the essence of the soul, which is real, not the number. See, infinite is a number, talking about number only, you talk about infinite. Therefore, that is number is only an illusion. In case of perception of double moon, the perception lasts till the ignorance lasts. Similar is the case with number. In Brahman, it would last till the right knowledge is attained. Bhartra Prapancha, a pre-Shankara Advaitin, who advocated a type of Advaita in a Veda-Veda model, had a place for Sarvamukti in his philosophy. He viewed that it is Brahman that evolves on the one hand as the jivas and the other as the physical universe. He advocated that the only soul which is cosmic soul reveals itself simultaneously through several bodily organisms, like Sarira Sariri Bhava, which came later on. The universal self exists in all beings and continues in time. If there is one soul to be liberated, the so-called individual souls, which are but partial expressions of it, can only contribute towards its liberation, which will not result until the effort of the last jiva in that direction is successful. So the last jiva must endeavor to get liberated, and then only all the jivas who remain as Ishwaras, Ishwara, will be liberated. This idea envisages that even the moral and material welfare of the person should be sought in the manner harmonious with the final aim of life. As Hiriyana would put it, the empirical aim of bhoga is for apavarga. A necessary corollary to this view is that the sublimation of the ideal of mukhya can be achieved through twofold discipline. One is karma, another is jnana. The first stage of it is for overcoming the narrow attachment, which is the source of man's false belief that he is essentially different from others. The main problem lies in the fact that the individual, to secure his personal peace and fulfillment, must achieve integration with the society of which he forms a part, and that society themselves need to be integrated into a world commonwealth. That is the idea. Here, the end is the good, not only my good, but yours, not mine, in that sense, everybody's. In this context, the idea of niskama karma in the Gita can be taken to mean to act not only for one's own sake, but the perfection of the universe. The underlying idea here is that there is nothing in this universe which stands isolated. The individual ends are only contributory to the greater purpose of social emancipation. In this life of mutual dependence, there seem to be a tendency to progress, a continuous advancement towards this goal. A universe inspired by a single spirit, constantly striving for the universal good, is the very essence of the ideal of Sarvamukti. One of our former philosophy professors of Madras University, T.M.P. Mahadevan, is of the opinion that this idea of Sarvamukti lays the spiritual foundation of Sarvodaya of Gandhi. The Gandhi's idea of the Sarvodaya, everybody must come up. Whole philosophy, whole thinking of Gandhi is in this direction. If there is a if there is a industry, it should be for everybody. If there is an economy, it should be for everybody. So that type of idea, Mahadevan thinks, is rooted in the Advaitic idea of Sarva Mukti. An individual cannot run away, and you cannot be self-centric. Thus, this I find as the most glaring socio-philosophical contribution of the Advaita, which underlying the idea that the man should grow and perfect along with society, which is not found in many other schools of thought in Indian philosophy. Shankara as an integrator of cultures. Shankara is frequently referred to one of the most important Indian philosophers of all times. He essentially contributed to the theological foundation of Hinduism, notwithstanding the fact that he claimed to give only a correct interpretation of the content of the Shruti literature, and he took pains to prove that his point of view, that is Advaita Vedanta, was the uniform teaching of this literature. Coming back to Shankara and his social concern, we find that Shankara was a great integrator of cultures and traditions. There are different types of faiths prevalent during his period. The main ones, you know, there are many people belonging to many different sects. There were the kinds of faith related to the worship of people like Ganapatya, Kaumara, Saiva, Shakta, Vaishnava and Saura. By the introduction of type of worship called Panchayatana, to which Professor Gambridge referred in the last class, Panchayatana Puja, Shankara infused a sense of unity among the people of India and integrated the nation at the worship altar, you know, the altar, the puja room. In everybody's puja room, you find the whole India, of every house. Sri Chandrasekharendra Saraswati, the last Acharya of Kanchi Math, says, I just quote, in his Panchayatana scheme, Shiva is worshipped as Bana Linga, which is found in plenty in the Omkarananda of the river Narmada. It is in Gujarat somewhere. Vishnu is worshipped as Shalagram, which can be heard from Gandaki river in the Himalayas. Crystal in which Surya is worshipped is found in the Vallam in Tamil Nadu. The Swarnamukhi stone in which Mother Goddess is worshipped is found in Swarnamukhi river in Andhra. The river Sona, following into the Ganga, abounds in the red Sonabhadra stones representing Ganapati. In addition to this, Kumara is also included in the Panchayatana, as he is the presiding deity of one of the remaining faiths of Sanmata in Tamil Nadu. So the different stones on which different gods were worshipped do not have the usual form normally associated with that particular godhead. Shalagrama is, you know, does not look like Krishna or Vishnu, or that which you get from other places, they don't look like Ganapati. So all that. What happens? The message is that the formless is worshipped through the form, a formless form worship. That is what Shankara's idea. The last Acharya of Kanchi says, though even the layman Indian knows the beautiful marks of each of these divinities, in the Panchayatana, the divinities are not usually worshipped in those forms, but are worshipped in symbols. This is an intermediary stage between form and the formless, because the symbols are certain kinds of ruckus formations and therefore have a form, yet they are formless. In that, they do not have any parts like face, eyes, hands, etc. See, in India, when they say that Hinduism, you know, they are idol worshippers and all that, they say. I still do not understand. Nobody worships the idol. We worship only the God inside the idol, isn't it? Only the God is represented by the idol. So, it is mainly directed towards the unity. In whatever form we worship, that is what is being brought out essentially by Shankara in giving all these, the Panchayatana Puja. So, a house having this Panchayatana with stones from different parts of the India is as though having the whole national consciousness frozen into it. So, it was for having re-established and integrated the six forms of worship on this basis of his philosophy of non-dualism that Shankara was entitled as సన్మత స్థాపనాచార్య. శంకర ఇంటిగ్రేటెడ్ మెన్ అట్ ద సోషల్ లెవెల్ బై రీస్ట్రక్చరింగ్ సోషల్ ఆర్డర్. ఇన్ అడిషన్ టు ద ప్రమోటింగ్ నేషనల్ ఇంటిగ్రేషన్ బై మీన్స్ ఆఫ్ రిలీజియన్, శంకర్ ఆల్సో అటెంప్టెడ్ అట్ నేషనల్ ఇంటిగ్రేషన్ బై రికగ్నైజింగ్ ద బేసిక్ క్వాలిటీ అండ్ డిగ్నిటీ ఆఫ్ ఇండివిజువల్స్. హీ కుడ్ డూ సో బై వన్ హిజ్ ఎక్స్టెన్సివ్ ట్రావెల్ టు ఆల్ ద పార్ట్స్ ఆఫ్ ద కంట్రీ. హీ హాజ్ ఎస్టాబ్లిష్డ్ 4 మఠాస్ అట్ 4 మెయిన్ పాయింట్స్ ఆఫ్ ద కంట్రీ, మెయిన్ ప్లేసెస్. ఓపెనింగ్ హిజ్ ఫిలాసఫిక్ సాంక్చురీ, నెహ్రూ సేస్ దట్ హీ ఓపెన్డ్ అప్ హిజ్ ఫిలాసఫిక్ సాంక్చురీ టు ఎవ్రీ వన్ హూ హాజ్ కెపబుల్ ఆఫ్ ఎంటరింగ్ ఇన్ టు ఇట్. సో ఆల్ దీస్ యాక్టివిటీస్ స్పీక్ వాల్యూమ్స్ ఫార్ ద ఫైర్ ఆఫ్ రివల్యూషన్ దట్ వాజ్ బర్నింగ్ ఇన్ హిమ్ ఫర్ సోషల్ రిఫార్మ్ బట్ విత్ ఇన్ ద ఫ్రేమ్వర్క్ ఆఫ్ ద వేదస్. ఇన్ హిజ్ రీస్ట్రక్చరైజేషన్ ఆఫ్ ద సోషల్ ఆర్డర్ వన్ కుడ్ నోటీస్ దట్ శంకర డిస్ట్రాయ్స్ ఓల్డ్ డగ్మాస్ నాట్ బై భావలెంట్లీ అటాకింగ్ దెమ్ బట్ బై ప్రొవైడింగ్ అన్ ఆల్టర్నేటివ్ సజెషన్ విచ్ వాజ్ మోర్ రీజనబుల్ అండ్ స్పిరిచువల్ విచ్ రికగ్నైజ్ ద బేసిక్ నాన్ డిఫరెన్స్ ఆఫ్ మ్యాన్ విత్ రియాలిటీ. హిజ్ వ్యూస్ His views proclaim the basic equality and dignity of individuals in a society. In his Digvijayas, he is said to have forged unity and integration into 59 kingdoms, small kingdoms around the country, which also brought about political unity in the country. Shankara gave a solid foundation of the concept of love. The question as to how can and why should I love my neighbor as myself when he is totally different from myself is answered by saying, because he is myself. The same self which resides in me inheres in him also. Applying the same logic to the entire creation, Shankara said that all of them are loved not for themselves as they appear, but for the sake of the self in them. You know, in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad we have Atmanattu Kamaya Sarvam Priyam Bhavati. Nothing becomes pleasant because of themselves, but because of yourself. Applying the same logic to the entire creation, Shankara said that all of them are loved not for themselves as they appear, but the sake of the self in them. For that eternal self, for the universal self, which we all share, in which we all live and move and have our beings. On the basis of philosophy of love, rooted in the philosophy of essential non-difference of all creation, that Shankara could furnish a rational, stable and solid foundation for such values as tolerance, mutual respect, acceptance, etc., forged the much needed integration in human relations on that basis and make them relevant to his posterity also. The practical dimension of Advaita does provide a necessity basic impetus, significance and sustenance for all other human values. It opens up a new vista of infinite potentiality for individuals, which should be only properly tapped and harnessed. It suggests that the finiteness and limitations to which man and universe are subjected are only apparent, and hence the barrier created by man among themselves on the basis of caste, color, creed, sex, race and religion, which when properly understood and practiced will set at naught the rivalries among the various religions. For Advaita, the only way to achieve this objective is being aware of the basic spiritual element underlying all creation, the non-duality of the reality, the basic non-difference of man with the reality, his capacity of infinite potentiality, the integration of thought, word and deed. The whole idea is to understand the self and act for the path of liberation that is applicable and necessary for the mankind. It may be a path of transcendence or by immanence. It is by understanding one's own self a person becomes purna and krutakritya at the individual level and also at the social level when he realizes that he is the child of the immortality, illusorily subjected to the worldly pains and pleasures. That is why the last message of this, the Advaita, is Srunantu Sarve Amrutasya Putraha. Thank you. So, I thank everybody, those who came to my lectures, and if there is any intervention, any comments, questions, I would happy to. Yes, please, Ravi. In Advaita, there are quite the first one to propound Ekajivavada was Mandara, and it came down later Advaitins like Sarvagyatman and others also have talked about this. Nana Jivavada is accepted by Vachaspati Mishra and many others. Like Vivarna School, many people have accepted Nana Jivavada. Mainstream view is Nanaji. Because it has, many Sarvagyans?
Yeah.
I don't get the question. Does he say like that? I have not read to you. So, what does he say? He does. He accepts Ekajivavada?
No. He argues against it. But then he also talks about his view of many Sarvagyas.
Suppose Ekajivavada is accepted, there will be many Sarvagyas. No, Ishwaras will be there. Isn't it? That is what has to happen. But this is a very important ideal that came in pre as well as post Sankaradvaita. Even Bhartru Prapancha talks about that. Vedavada Vadins also talk about that. That a person can be only liberated. The liberation is meaningful if all others are liberated. A socialism of liberation. Quite a few, like Sarvajnatman, Mandana, and many in the Vivarana school. Those who propounded the idea of Pratimivavada. Pratimivavada is Ekajivavada is an extension of Pratimivavada only. Because Pratimivavadins talk in two ways. One is Nanajivavada. See, as I told you, the sunlight reflected in many pots. Are they many suns or only one sun? The question of Bimba and Pratimba, the dialogue, the whether there is only one sun reflected in all these things or there are many. If the pots are only many, but the sun is one. The water is many, sun is one. That is how it is only one. So ultimately to become Eka Jiva means there is only one Ishwara accepted. So whether can we, the place of Jiva is in Ishwara. In that way we have to extend. So ultimate analysis, liberation lies in the total liberation of everybody in the world. That is the idea. It is in passing because Shankara, I don't think, has talked anything about Ekajivavada or Anekajivavada, isn't it? In Shankara, you don't find any Ekajivavada or Anekajivavada, but Advaitins talk about this, and it has relevance also. Like pre-Shankara Advaitins also talk, pre-Shankara Vedaveda Vadins also talk about this. Like Bhartru Prapancha and Bhadari also talks about a bit about this. Yes. That is the basis. Yes, I do accept because in Shankara also you can find both, but not that, because when he talks about Jivan Mukta, he talks about one person. If Sarva Mukti is an extension of Jivan Mukti, you can argue with it or argue for it and argue against it also. That Sarva Mukti idea, but Sarva Mukti idea will not be, you know, unacceptable to Shankara.
Because yogis against that, the Samkhya view is like this.
Yes.
They argue against the Advaita and say, well, if you say that everything is one, well, how do you explain that the fact that when one person becomes liberated, free, everybody doesn't become liberated?
Yes.
So we have to respond to this.
Therefore, that is a point of contention here. But that is, you know, the Purushankara Advaita is exactly bothered about this question. You know, can you just do away with saying that everything is falsity and there is, you very specifically tell, because the Samkhyans have put forth this question, whether you have one jiva or aneka jiva, many jivas. If does your empiricalism or empiricality accept one self or many selves? So this is why the Pratibhiva Vadins especially are caught up with this idea, Vivarana school, that we should have one jiva, eka jiva vada. But it is, you know, it is very few Advaitins who have accepted eka jiva vada. Large number of them have accepted anek jiva vada. A model which is almost like, you know, Sankhya model of many Purushas. So, I think there is no other question. I thank all of you again for being patient with me. Yes. Any question you want to ask? No. Yeah. And I also thank the Hindu Center as well as Sonaga for this opportunity given to me. Yes. So that is also recorded?
Yes. Yeah. Thank you very much.